You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
This is Robin Roberts, and the Michael K. Show starts right now. Take it away, Michael, Don, and Peter.
Hi, Robin, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Friday, April 23rd, 2021, the end of the week. The week has gone by so quickly. Michael Kay, Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart for the next 4.5 hours, but we are actually together the other 19 and a half. Those are your responsibility. Hope you're having a great day. It's a gorgeous day. A little bit of a brisk chill in the air, but nothing like it was yesterday. And we're ready to roll, Don and Peter. We are ready to roll.
Yes, I was out and about today trying to enjoy the day. Got to see Mom. She says hello.
Love that woman.
She says hello to Peter as well. She's always had an affection for Peter.
I don't get that. I mean, people have an infection for Peter, but never an affection. You know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying there, right?
I know exactly what you're saying.
All right, so we start today with Diamond Notes on the Michael K. Show, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. Now, I'm going to be the guy that nobody expects me to be. I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to say there's nothing to worry about with the New York Mets, and I'm going to tell you why. The reason they have not played well is because they have not hit. I think the pitching has been, for the most part, good enough to win, but they haven't hit. And a lot of people don't believe this, but it's hard to hit in cold weather. It really is. And they have played in miserable, miserable conditions. Now you can say, well, you didn't say that about the Yankees. Well, they played in Dunedin, and they played in a dome in St. Pete, and they didn't hit. But Wrigley Field was frigid these last couple of days. And the one thing I don't doubt about the Mets, Don, is their ability to hit. So they got swept by the Cubs. I get it. It's never fun. Pete Alonso had kind of an off-color remark about what it was like. But the bottom line is, like I say about the Yankees, well, if the Mets aren't going to hit, they're not going to win. So I look at that Met lineup, I go, they're going to hit. Now, am I concerned about their defense? Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I concerned about the back end of their rotation? Yeah. Am I concerned about their bullpen? Yeah, I am not concerned about their hitting. And the reason that they got swept in Chicago, for the most part, there was one game they got blown out, is they're not hitting. So their on-base percentage is .325. That's eighth in the majors and fourth in the National League. But they have a .186 average, which is the second worst in all of baseball with runners in scoring position. And in runners in scoring position with two outs, it's .132 average. Mm. That's dead last in the majors. They had a chance in extra innings yesterday to win it. They had the bases loaded, Dominic Smith up, one out, he wraps into a double play. Bottom line, Don, they will hit, the weather will get better. I bet they have a great game tonight against the Nationals, and it's always good to bet that way when Jacob DeGrom's on the mound.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't bet on a lot of offense, right, Peter?
DeGrom is the safest bet you can make with this team, that's for sure.
But, listen, I'm fundamentally with you, Michael. It is frustrating because, yeah, it's cold. It was cold for the Cubs, too. And the Cubs are struggling offensively and put 16 runs up in game two of the series. And both teams had the exact same situation in their halves of the 10th.
Yep.
Bases loaded, one out, and the Mets grounded to a double play with Dominic Smith. And then Hayward gets the big hit, the exact same situation with one out, bases loaded in the bottom half of the 10th. That was a winnable game that they didn't get because of the clutchness of the situation, right? And even Lindor, I give him credit. He did work out the walk, but yeah, you'd love to be able to see maybe him get a big hit there too. But, you know, listen, he worked the count full, and he was able to get the walk and load the bases and set it up for what could have been not just a run, Michael, but a big inning, and they didn't get it. So, yeah, that's something that you can't just say it's the weather because they got the guys on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to freak out. It's early. I think there's enough potential offensively on this team. I think they'll pitch. The pitching's going to get better. I like what Diaz has done. Obviously, you know, he was forced into a second inning last night, which I don't like.
Which is not good. That's not good with him.
I don't like doing that because it's not something. He only did it twice last year and I think twice the year before. It's like last year was no problem because it was 60 games, but twice, or it's not a lot anyway. It's like either between four and six times over the last 2 years he's been forced to do it, and it's never good. And now what's his availability today after having thrown so many pitches? So I'm fundamentally with you, Michael, but the situational stuff is something that sometimes doesn't go away when things warm up.
Well, I mean, Lindor gets the walk, and you get the situation you want, right? Dom Smith, their best offensive player last night, 2-for-4 mm-hmm. at the time. So it's the opportunity you want. They just weren't able to get it done. I hear what Michael's saying, that, you know, the blowout's an aberration, and those things happen. But you do get the sense that this is a team that's not necessarily in trouble right now. They're just not playing to their potential.
But also, let's not forget, the reason that they got blown out is they kicked the ball around in that fourth inning the other night, and a 2-0 game became a 7-2 game, predominantly for the fact they couldn't field. So I don't know when if that's going to get any better, right? So, listen, I like the attitude here. It's nice to be optimistic instead of pessimistic about a team, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on here, and I'm going to give them the benefit, mostly because it's been a truncated season for them. How many rainouts, snowouts, coronavirus situation. So now they got a little bit of a groove here. They never seem to win at Wrigley Field. Let's see what they do against the Nats.
And they're still in first place. So they're 7-7. The Phillies are 9-9. The Phillies have played four more games. Now, there was one thing I questioned about in yesterday's game. So it was J.D. Davis that pinch hit, right, and got the double. How does he not have a triple? What was he doing? I mean, did he think it was a home run and he jogged out of the box, which is unacceptable because that ball was banging around the outfield in Wrigley Field for about 3.5 minutes, and then you look up and J.D. Davis is at second base. That makes no sense to me. I don't understand it. And we see it all the time with players. They think a ball's going out, they stand there and they look at it, and they don't get the proper amount of bases that they should get. Who knows if that changes the game? Because he didn't score from second base.
No. And you know what drives me crazy? Not so much last night, but in all those situations. I don't know if it drives you crazy too, Michael. Is that, listen, I didn't play at any kind of higher level in high school or a little bit of college, but it's the same in Little League across the board. There's a third base coach for a reason. And you see these guys, they round set, and they're looking into center field. They're turning their bodies. Look at the third base coach. He's going to tell you what to do. He's going to tell you to come, or he's going to tell you to hold up. But these guys, they have to follow the ball. What are you following the ball for? You got a first base coach that can tell you if it's in the gap. You got your third base coach to tell you whether to stay or come around. Why are they looking at the ball?
They probably don't trust anybody but themselves.
Well, he should have been at third.
Now, he definitely the way the ball caromed out, I don't understand why he was not at third. The run scored easily, and then he's just coasting into second base and celebrating. Not a good look. Not a good look. So,
well, you see, out of the box, he's looking at the ball. And if you know anything about Wrigley Field, that's the great thing. No matter what generation you are, you almost know this field like it's your own, because there's so many big games have been played there, and it's the same place, and they never change it, really, is that between the ivy and the wacky caroms, right, you never know what's going to – you should always be thinking about taking the extra base there. And the other thing you always got to worry about is the wild pitch, right, because that stone wall is not that far away. So, but all these things, you should know the configuration. Do your work. If a ball's in the gap out there, I'm trying to take the extra base. It can get hung up in the ivy, and it gets hung up in the ivy, then it's a ground rule double, doesn't matter. But all the different idiosyncrasies of that ballpark, the wells down the lines, you should always be trying to take the extra base.
Now, I've always preached to people about every game in baseball is interconnected to the previous and the next. You know, you can't just manage that one game except for the seventh game of a World Series for that one game. You got to think about the next game and the game before. Well, they got blown out in game two against the Cubs. And for some reason, Luis Rojas used Miguel Castro for four outs in a game that they were getting killed. And Miguel Castro's a pretty high leverage reliever. Now, after Castro was done, then they brought in Guillorme. But they had already used Castro for four outs, so they had to bring in Castro on last night's game, and he got one out. And that's all he could get because he had four outs the previous night. And then they start to go to May and Loop and things like that. And that's why you have to end up using Diaz two innings, because maybe you don't use Diaz in the ninth inning. Because usually you don't use your closer on the road in a tie game. because you can have a save on the road. You use your closer in the, at home in a tie game because you're never going to have a save situation after eight innings. So the reason, one of the reasons they lost yesterday is because they pushed Diaz to a second inning and they used Castro for four outs in a game that they had no chance to win. So everything is interconnected. I still have not, because I don't watch it as intently as I'm, as when I'm broadcasting eight games, I still don't have a read, Don, yet on Rojas. I don't know. I don't have a feel yet on how he handles pitchers, but that wasn't a good move using Castro, who's a very good pitcher and could be really effective for them. Four outs in a blowout game made no sense to me, and it did impact them yesterday as well.
No, it did. And again, we don't know how everybody's feeling. I'm sure there's a lot of decisions that are made going back to opening day, taking DeGrom out, that are organizational, right? So I don't know if there's enough to be able to tell exactly whether it's him and what his MO is when it comes to pitchers, but. And I know Wrigley Field's a crazy place, Michael. So sometimes you never treat a game being over because you can put up 10 runs in one inning. But sometimes you got to lose the battle to win the war. And you know that you've got games coming up against divisional opponents. And you know you don't have a day off here. I don't know why you're using a high-leverage pitcher for multiple innings in a blowout game.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense. Those are the Diamond Notes brought to you by Two by London. The Engagement Shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. I think the Mets just have to tread water, keep their head above water. I'll try to use as many cliches as I can until they start getting back Carlos Carrasco and then in a couple of months, Noah Syndergaard. Because if they're within striking distance and all of a sudden – you've got a starting rotation of DeGrom and Stroman and Carrasco and Syndergaard and Walker. That's about as good as it gets. So, yeah, cold weather, you're not going to hit a lot. You can see guys are off to slow starts. They're all going to hit. Conforto's going to hit. Lindor's going to hit. Dom Smith has been hitting, but he didn't get the big hit, as Peter said, when they had the bases loaded. Hit the ball sharply, though. And I think they're going to be okay. I'm going to be the calming influence now.
Well, listen, guys, let's – You know, it's like people always say in this town.
What do they say?
Not everyone can be the New York Knicks. You know? Most teams can't win every night. It's only the Knicks. The Knicks are the only team that can win every night.
Really good point.
You know?
Really good point.
I'd love to gauge the Met fan, though. Like, we talk so much Yankees because they always seem to be on everybody's radar. But I love Met fan. Like, are you like Michael and me, where I'm just like, let's wait and see. No, there's nobody above 500 in this division. And I saw a lot of the Phillies against San Francisco this week, and there's nothing that really, you know, fearful there about that team. You saw Atlanta, Michael. It was only two games, but you could see they're limited right now, especially with their injuries. Miami's a nice team, but I don't think a threat over 162. And, Washington's still a team that, yeah, I know they had their issues, but they've got a minus 20 run differential. And they're in last place. So nobody has ran away and hid. At least with the Yankees, the Red Sox are a concerning team, right? They're four games over. But there's nothing like that right now in the National League East. I wonder if Met fans feel the same way.
Peter, question.
Go ahead.
What do you think of the jacket, or do you not have the return yet?
I don't have the return on.
I love it.
What are you doing, man?
Is it one of the new ones?
Yeah.
Broke LV?
It right out. What do you think, Don?
I love it.
Do you really?
Tasty.
I'll tell you in 2 seconds. And by the way, I know you would normally poke at me for wearing a T-shirt today, but
it's a
T-shirt for autism awareness. My buddy Surratt made a dope sneaker with Diadora and Foot Locker to raise money for autism awareness, and that's today's shirt. Ooh, the jacket is gorgeous.
You like it?
Gorgeous.
And so is your T-shirt.
I don't know if I like the tie, though.
I think the tie brings the colors together.
No, you know what it does? I take it back. That middle color goes.
Yeah.
I didn't see the middle color, and so I wasn't sure. I like it.
All right, so back off.
Yeah, I want to apologize for that.
You know what? Apologies.
Just like you apologized for your horrifying take about Julius Randle, I'm man enough to apologize for being wrong about your tie.
I got to tell you what. So I got off the air, and I'm preparing to do the open, and it felt invigorating to actually admit to a mistake. You know, because I don't make many mistakes.
That's right.
And then when, you know, you and Don felt so strongly about it, which meant nothing to me. But then when that caller called in.
Right.
That really changed my whole outlook. I said, you know what? Cleanse yourself. It's cathartic. I was wrong. Julius Randle is an MVP candidate. He's not going to win, but the fans have every right to chant it.
There you go.
See, that's it, because I'm not really sure that you – I think you did the right thing. I'm not sure you're convinced that you were wrong.
See, now –
And here's
now
why.
You're going to question my apology. I mean, how do I win?
Follow this through, Peter.
Okay.
Because what did he say he apologized for? His take on Julius Randle. That was not a Julius Randle take. It was a take
on the fans.
Knicks fans chanting MVP.
They had every right.
When they had
every right.
Because you questioned their intelligence. Because you said, I've always been told that Knicks fans are savvy, that they know basketball.
Oh,
why
yeah.
are they chanting
that was,
MVP
that was nasty.
At the Garden?
That was nasty.
So it was your take on the fans, not Randle.
I apologize for everything I've ever said.
You should.
So now it goes
everything that has rubbed anybody the wrong way, apologize for.
Keep going.
Yeah.
No, listen, hot takes are very important in this business, all right? And it's not about whether you're right or wrong. It's just that take was wrong the second it leapt out of your mouth.
That's right.
Like, it never had a chance to be right.
It was disgraceful.
See now, what you're doing, Don, is what you always accuse me of. You're hanging on the rim. I apologize. Let it go, man.
You know what, Don? Michael's also right.
Let it go.
Because I know Michael, and I can almost tell by the tone, mm-hmm. he's trying to do something here.
He's
right?
so...
This is there is not an ounce of humility in this apology. An ounce.
He's working an angle.
There's no question he's working an angle. And I know what the angle is, and I'm not going to say it.
Oh.
But I know the angle.
Well, say it. What's the angle?
Well, you just said it yourself a few moments ago, like how good it feels. You mentioned it yesterday that, you know, there's a lot of people that don't apologize for their mistakes, don't own their mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're working an angle here
to try to make you a better person.
That this is the new Michael K.
No, I am a better person than most people. That's I don't have to play.
But I think you're getting better. This post pandemic Michael is going to be a better version of yourself.
The summer of K means, you know, admit when you're wrong. Put your heart out there. Let yourself be loved. Do it. It's going to be great. Really is.
I hope so. I want it to be great.
You know, celebrating our 2 p.m. start time, you know that, right?
Sure.
And we're giving away $10,000 in the month of April in the 2 o'clock hour, which we're in right now. Later in the 2 p.m. hour, be listening for the KCast sound, which Don and Peter hate, but here it is. See ya! See ya! See ya! And be ready to call in at 888-987-ESPN to claim $500 cash. It's all from your home for the hookup, 98.7. ESPN. Now, I'll also take Don and Peter's side. The sounder is spliced together, Sia's, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I've done it once in 30 years broadcasting Yankee games, it was a legitimate triple Sia when Derek Jeter hit the home run in the World Series, Mr. November. Why not just use that instead of splicing together three Sia's? You know what I'm saying? I think that would be more palatable for both of you.
I'd like to revamp the whole thing altogether.
Well, you know, it's almost over, babe, so let's relax.
Good point.
Let's go to the phones. It's another week, yeah, another week. Next Thursday, I learned how to golf. Next Friday is the final day of the contest. Not even a contest, just a giveaway. Here, take money. Nothing better than that. Let's go to Patrick in East Hampton. I love East Hampton. Have you ever been to East Hampton, Don?
I have, yes.
It's lovely. It's a lovely, lovely town. Let's go to Patrick. Hi, Patrick.
How are you, fellas?
What's up?
I just want to thank you guys for helping me get through this pandemic. You guys are the best talk radio show.
Well, thank you, Patrick.
Number two, I just want to know, you're quite welcome. I just want to let you know, I have met Don one time, but Ryan Hurley introduced me to you at the Fan Fest with the All-Star Game at the Yankee Stadium.
But and what'd you think? Wait, Patrick, what'd you think of Don? I mean, what was the vibe you got from him?
He was fine. He was a gentleman.
Really?
He was with
Steve
Phillips. I mean, he was more friendly than Steve, I will say.
A lot of people said that.
Ryan and I were friends. Yeah, Ryan and I are friends. So I used to speak a lot of sports with Ryan in the morning at the coffee truck. every morning on his way in.
Nice.
But I just want, you know, this Luis Rojas, you know, I just think he's overmatched. I mean, for him to use a quality reliever like Castro in a blowout, he just wastes him. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. And I think, I don't know if he'd be interested or not, Willie Randolph should get another shot somewhere.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about Willie yesterday on the broadcast. I mean, the Wilpons are gone. The Wilpons did Willie wrong. They really did. A, firing him, and B, the way they fired him, making him go to the West Coast, beat the Angels, and then fire him, make him come all the way back. That was low, low brow. I'm surprised that Willie has not gotten another shot at managing, but I'm not sure that Alderson and Cone would go that route. It wouldn't be a bad idea, and I don't want Rojas to lose his job. But I think this Met team is built to be in the playoffs, and they can't have, you know, any kind of shaky managerial moves done. So, and Steve Cohen did not hire Luis Rojas.
I mean, listen, nope. He hasn't botched the lineup card yet.
No, he hasn't. So. And that's always an important thing.
Yeah, well, with Mets managers, you never know.
Let's go to Christina in Rhode Island. Christina.
Hey, Michael, I'm a huge fan. I listen to you guys every day, so you guys kind of make
Christina.
Me nostalgic for back home as I'm in grad school in Rhode Island. I just want to kind of give my opinion about the Mets. I'm a diehard fan. Ever since my father wouldn't let me watch the Yankees with him as a kid because I was a girl.
Oh, my goodness. So, really? Dad, come on.
I know. So now I suffer every single day. But I just want to give my opinion. So I don't miss a game. At this point in time, I mean, it's April. I mean, I'm a pessimistic Met fan, as are most Met fans. So I'm not too concerned right now. The thing I'm most concerned about is what we're always concerned about with the Mets is, you know, getting runs with runners in scoring position. That's what my main concern is. And I do agree with you, Michael. The hustle with Davis and just staring at the ball as it comes off the bat, like there has to be more hustle there. Other than that, I think we're going to be okay once Carrasco and Syndergaard come back and Lugo. I think we can't forget about him.
You know, that's a great point, Christina. We should have mentioned that. Lugo's been a big loss for them because that just kind of really stretches out the bullpen with another
right.
quality arm that could actually close when Diaz is tired. But I'm just shocked that what sports have become, that a guy like Davis pinch hits, gets a double, doesn't run hard out of the box, and he remains in the game. And again, I don't want to be the guy on the lawn and, you know, Rob Manfred, the commissioner, let the guys have fun. Listen, you could pose it. If I was a manager, here's what I would tell a guy like J.D. Davis. You could pose it at the plate. You could flip the bat 3 feet in the air. I'll tell you what, it better go. If it doesn't go, you're coming out of the game. I'm going to embarrass you because you embarrassed the organization by not running. So I think that would put a premium. You better hit the ball 500 feet and know that it's gone if you're going to stand there and look at it, because if it hits the wall and you don't get the bases that you should get, you're going to be embarrassed like you just embarrassed me. But they don't do it, Don. They just don't do it. Take a look at that play again. It got past their center fielder. There's no way Davis should be at second. And that's a big difference, second and third.
Of course it is. But what I don't understand is it wasn't like he was styling. How do you know for a fact that it's gone? When you, like if you bat flip and you style, all right, then I guess you serve some sort of purpose. You scratch some sort of itch to do that. But just looking at it, because look at the replay, Michael. He's not styling. It's not bat flipping. He's just looking at it. What are you looking at it for?
It's more inexplicable. See, when he's like, he's pointing to the team right now. If I was Luis Rojas, I'd go, come on in. Come in. But I'm not just jumping on Rojas. It doesn't happen.
Well, because, again, I guess he was admiring it. But you have base coaches for a reason. So that you don't have to look at the ball. Look at the coach. And you're running towards him. All right? So he's waving you around. So now you know it's not a home run. If it's a home run, he's going to signal, all right, you're good. But you want to watch it. You want to see it go out of the park. Listen, we've got the technology now. This is 1947 where you got to go back to some, you know, movie reel in a theater at a movie a month later. I mean, you can go to the tablet right in the dugout right after you hit it to see what it looked like. And then you round second base, and then you look at your third base coach, and he tells you to stay or come around. There's no reason to look.
Peter, we're going to go to break right now.
Go ahead.
And I just want to tell you that when we come back, we're going to take a phone call from someone who blatantly cheated on the show. always been a caller to our show. And this morning he popped up on another show. And you're going to have to rein me in because I'm going to take him to task.
I got his back.
You have his back?
Yes. If it's who I think it is. Let me look.
Well, why are you playing the Wizard of Oz Wicked Witch song?
Because it's in my head because there was a gust of wind the other day, and I thought Nancy was going to fly like to the next town.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, I got his back. I have his back.
Okay.
Absolutely. Right.
Sure?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, you listen to this, Peter, and you score the round, okay?
I'll score it.
All right, we'll come back. We're giving away $500 in this hour as well. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you starting off for Friday with a lot of fun right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Big day tomorrow, Don and Peter. Big day in the Kay family.
What is that?
It is Charlie's first game, small fry baseball. And the coaches actually pitched to the kid. So the last time he played, like, in this kind of setting was T-ball. So he's ready.
Oh, man. That is awesome.
But my kids really, they have narcomania in their DNA. So the name of his team is the Rays. And so we got an email, and it's got the Rays logo. And a lot of baseball teams, you know, for children around the country, they have agreements with Major League Baseball, and they do pay some sort of fee to use the logos or whatever. And Charlie was very concerned when he saw he was on the Rays. He goes, "You sure this is legal?" I said, "What do you mean, is it legal?" He said, "I mean, isn't it copyright infringement?" He's 6 years old.
Wait, what?
Yeah, he said, "Is this copyright infringement?" I guess on Roblox, which they always play, they have words like that because they come up with the stuff all the time. I said, "Just worry about hitting the ball. Don't worry about copyright infringement. You'll be fine."
So you always wondered about, because when I played Little League, it was always sponsored. Like, I played on Rhodes Agency. That was a real estate agency in town.
And I played with Barcliff Getty.
But when I saw the original Bad News Bears, and I'm seeing they're playing the Dodgers and the Yankees, and I'm like, Dad, why can't we do that? Like, how cool would that be to be able to be a major league team with a major league hat and all that? And then you put the sponsorship on the back, you know. And my dad was part of the Little League, and he said, "No, it's too costly. You got to pay a fee.
Yeah.
Plus, you get more money from the sponsors when you can get it on the front of the logo and on the hat,
like Chico's Bail Bonds."
Right, but that was always on the back, but it said Bears on the front.
Right.
But when I'd Rhodes Agency, I had the R, I had said Rhodes Agency, there were a nice red hat, and I don't know how you were as a kid, or Peter, when you played, I wore that hat all the time. I wore it to school. I love that hat.
Where is that hat now? It's probably in your garage somewhere, because you don't throw anything away.
I really don't.
I didn't have a team that was like a major league team until... like the tryout league I played in high school, we were the Marlins, and had full Marlins uniform. It was all right.
The one thing that's fortunate for me is that tomorrow is a night game. Yankees and the Indians starts at 6, so I can actually be there. So that's like thrilling.
Wow.
That I can.
What
be
times?
There.
What times first pitch?
2:00. Amazingly enough,
I just love the built-in narcomania that is
the Kay family.
The Kay family. Isn't this gimmick, isn't this copyright infringement? It's unbelievable.
I've never seen, like, usually when anybody talks about my kids looking like me, they say that you look, with all of Michael, the resemblance is all like verbal in the way they carry themselves.
I know. Listen here, brother. Last time I checked, you're not in Major League Baseball, nor do you have the rights of Major League Baseball and their partners.
I love it. Teach my kids to do the right thing. And finally, I gotta give a big hug to LV of John Varvatos. I am getting
you look
love.
Beautiful.
I'm getting one of the big-time executives at Yes said, "What a great color for you. Jacket looks great."
Really?
And it's getting positive reviews on Twitter, which is, you know, a cesspool. They don't say anything positive, so it must be
really
terrific.
Nice. And my two jackets are gorgeous as well. I got to break it out because I got the game Sunday. I'm probably going to wear one of them Sunday at the Garden.
But well, the next time you have a Ranger game after a game, a show, wear it on the show.
Well, May 5th, Rangers Capitals at the Garden. That's a Wednesday, so I'll be doing the show. I will wear one of those jackets because they're gorgeous.
Steve Brodzinski, who listens to the show all the time, said if Rosenberg's going to go casual Friday, might as well go full out, rock a muscle shirt and bathing suit and have a mixed drink in his hand.
You know what? I don't hate the idea, especially with the mixed drink. But I can't do that because I have to drive after the show to the Barclays Center.
Oh, that's right. You're going to the Nets, but you're not wearing that T-shirt to the Barclays Center. I know you're getting dressed up for the Barclays Center.
I probably will. I mean, I haven't done anything social in a long time, so I might wear a butter soft leather jacket, you know, something, everything man. Crispy, new, you know, freshness.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I mean, I went to ShopRite yesterday. I felt like I was in St. Bart. So just being out is just tremendous.
I've heard that about which ShopRite? Well, don't tell me the location, but I've heard some of them feel like that.
Oh, it is. It's like a resort. All right. So this happened today. Let's bring them on first, okay? Let's go to our good friend Griffin in Connecticut. Griffin, how you doing today? Griffin.
Well, this isn't working.
This is awful. So not only was he on KJZ today, but he bails on us.
Let's hear what happened on KJZ.
Do you have it?
I thought you had it.
I'm here. I'm here.
What happened, Griffin? What happened?
I hit the mute.
No, you got to watch
mute.
Out.
I hit the mute button on my phone.
Well, I love the way you say button, man. Number one. Number two, okay, why are you on another show? You're our guy. What are you calling up KJZ for? What's going on there, Griff?
Okay, I'm not big on New York sports. The only sport that I love is the Yankees. I'm a diehard Yankee fan.
Okay.
Other than that, I like the Saints, the Heat, and the Capitals, and LSU for my college football team. So I was asking them what my Saints should do. So that's really what I was doing. You guys are my love, and I love you three. And Peter, I'm sorry that I was made fun of you earlier with that mustache. I wanted to be honest because you're my pal. So pals should be honest with each other.
You know what, Griffin?
So I'm not being rude to you guys at all and abandon you guys.
Well, Griffin, I got to tell you one thing, and I don't want you to take this. I feel like you cheated on me. When I woke up today and heard you were on the morning show, I felt dirty and cheap. That's what I felt like.
Michael, I don't cheat on you because in next thing you know, at 7 o'clock, I'm listening to you once again because I have to listen to you because I love you.
All right.
You do phenomenal.
Well, hold on.
I wouldn't cheat on you at all.
But Griffin, let's just be honest here. Let's just call it what it is. You show your love to Michael, Don, and myself by listening to this show. Yes, you may hear Michael at 7 o'clock, but you're watching the Yankees, okay? The love you show, you guys agree with me, right? The love is shown here on this program.
Oh, yes, it's shown on this program. It's also shown on the Yankees because of Meredith and Paul and Michael.
See? Meredith. But wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, Meredith does a phenomenal job of what she does.
Phenomenal.
She sure does. I'm going to defend Griffin, all right? It wasn't like he called another radio station. He's married to us between the hours of 2 and 6:30, but you know what? He can get what he needs elsewhere as long as it's still on 98.7 ESPN.
Okay, so let me call
talk
20
a lot
seconds.
Of
Wait a second, Griff.
Capitals hockey.
Wait a second, Griff. Let me call a timeout on you, fraud Don, okay? But you let Spike call every radio station that exists, and you don't have a problem with that.
I never said I didn't. When did I say I didn't?
I thought you didn't. You never came down on him.
Well, because I don't want to alienate the people. You decided to call Griffin out. I wasn't going to call him out.
Now, Griffin,
but he didn't call Boomer and Carton. He called our show, and he went, hey, listen, I look at these callers as all like an arranged marriage, okay?
Right.
All right? They get what they need from us, but if there's something we can't give them, go get it someplace else. We can't give them
what a
Saints
very open
analysis.
Relationship.
Very, Don, very progressive.
Very
yeah,
progressive.
So listen, there's certain things we don't do 2 to 6:30. And one of those things is break down the Saints draft, right?
I would do it.
We're not talking very much Heat basketball or any Capitals hockey, much to my dismay. So let him get his fix elsewhere because there's certain things we don't do.
You know what?
He's 100% right, because you don't do, you only do New York because that's what you do. That's what New York listeners want, Peter Rosenberg. So you don't ask the great star, Kurt
Rosenberg.
Oh, wow. My Washington football do with the fifth or whatever
Griffin
pick we got.
Is doing an unflattering.
He's going to fall down there.
Imitation of you, Peter. An unflattering imitation.
You know what?
That's
I gotta
what Griff
tell you.
Just did.
He apologized earlier.
Right, and then went up and in again.
Way worse. I mean, it's like saying to someone, hey, you know, I'm sorry that I said I didn't like your tie. I meant to tell you your mother is ugly. I mean, that's what you just did.
Wow. There's so many things to unwrap here, because the way I look at it, what Griffin just left my house, right? Right? I'm sitting in my house smoking a cigarette, satisfied, right?
Yeah.
And then I find out Griffin went across the street and visited another house. And I feel shameful. I feel shamed right now.
Well, then maybe you should have done a better job satisfying him to the point where he didn't feel like he needed to go somewhere.
Oh, let's all calm down here.
Wow. So this, you know what? Let's tie it all together, Peter. This explains the Carlos situation.
Is that what you think is happening there?
Well, I don't want to say anything.
There's nothing to say. He's a friend of mine. He's my neighbor.
You know what's crazy about the Griffin thing?
What's that? By the way, Griffin, drop madness just the way he says button. Listen.
I hit the mute button on my phone.
Button. I love it.
Can I get that one more time?
Yes.
I hit the mute button on my phone.
Button.
Never heard that before.
Or this.
Listen.
This could also be a two seed.
I'm here.
Now, for the record. What's so hurtful about this, and I don't know if you guys will remember this, but I'm telling you right now, as God is my witness, Griffin is a thing because of me. I spotted something in Griffin, okay? And I made a point of bringing up Griffin and helped develop him into him being Griffin, who was not once but twice in Drop Madness. How does he repay me? He did an impression of me?
Unflattering, too. You have to add that.
Andrew, what were the words that I said when you sent me the text, or Ryan sent the text, that Griffin was on KJZ? What did I say?
I think you said bad guy.
Exactly. That's what I said. Bad. I'm turning on Griffin. He's a bad guy.
But how could you turn on somebody that says button like this?
I hit the mute button on my phone.
Mute button. Not mute button. Mute button. It's like me saying, what was it yesterday? Waterbury?
Waterford.
Waterford. Who knew the show was going to be this great today? Wow.
Right, I knew it.
You did?
I did.
Oh, you should have told me. I was uncertain. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
It's amazing what's happening on social media. Ed Claremont writes, Don is promoting radio infidelity, and I don't know how to feel about it. Steve Brzezinski again chimes in. Talk about the ultimate heel turn of the year. Griffin is a national treasure. How about that?
I mean.
Shining Wizards strong. Kevin says, Griffin says button the same way Michael Kay says Titans.
That is correct.
Yeah. Very astute listeners we have. Very astute.
I just don't think it's cheating if you go elsewhere at the radio station. You'd be listening all day.
I agree. Now, if they were to, like, take things from this show and blatantly make it a part of another show, that I might start to question, but that's not what happened here. You know, Griffin's our guy, and even though I hate his guts, he's our guy, and he didn't do anything wrong. until he attacked me a few minutes ago.
I think the thing that he did wrong was this.
I hit the mute button on my phone.
Let's harken back to yesterday, because I think that's important too. Let's listen to one of the great moments in the show's 20-year history. Let's go to Ed in Waterford. Let me try that again. Ed in Waterford. I still didn't say it right. Ed in Waterford.
What?
What's up, Ed?
Wow.
It's in a word.
Troubling. Very troubling.
Let's go to Craig in Long Island. Craig, what's up?
What's going on, guys? How are you?
I'd Good. Like to just know what was going on with the phone there. It's just, it's interesting to me.
You all right?
Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what's going on? You guys are the best radio show in New York. I listen to you every day.
That's right.
I just had a little bone to...
Craig, you got to get closer to the speaker. I don't know if you're on speakerphone, if you have a bag over your head.
Well, yeah,
what
I was going to say, did the person that abducted you put holes in the box?
Can you hear me now? I just
yes.
turned on the regular phone.
Yes, shoot.
There you go.
All right, I just had a little bone to pick with Peter.
Oh, great.
When the Knicks got Carmelo Anthony, Ebro in the morning had people calling, and I said I could feel it this year. And Peter said, I think what you're feeling is heartburn. And everybody laughed at me. Now, what am I feeling now, Peter? The Knicks are back, huh?
Well, hold on. You should. What you're feeling? First of all, that was just a mean. That was a mean radio.
A long time for that, Craigie.
Yeah, that's.
Yes, years I've been waiting for this call.
Well, listen. First of all, I feel bad because I went on to see Carmelo quite a bit over those years, and he's a great guy. So I was just teasing, but you should feel the opposite of heartburn. You should feel tremendous. You should feel light on your feet. You should feel nothing but joy right now. Eight straight, baby.
Do you know what that phone call reminded me of? It comes from the same family of the jerk store called, and they're out of you. I mean, the guy waited forever. Carmelo was traded to the Knicks, 10 years ago? He waited a decade.
Isn't it funny, though? We take calls, in my case, twice a day. I have two shows in which I talk to people. And I've been doing it every day I've been on Hot now, I think, 13 years. And, we take calls. It's not a big deal. You take calls, blah, 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 blah. For callers, they remember the few times they get through to a radio show. Unless you're Spike or Ira and we're the only people you call, it's rare. So they remember that moment. I had no recollection of saying it was heartburn.
And it's a bad line by you, too. Not only did you insult the guy, but a pedestrian line by a brilliant guy.
Now, Andrew Gundley makes a great point because he's a great guy and he's very smart. He said that I was right. The guy called and tried to get it back on me, but I was right. He said the Knicks were back at the time, and they never were really back. And, I don't blame Carmelo, but they were not back.
Let's go to Matt in New Rochelle. Matty.
Hey, what's up, guys? Good afternoon. Hey, Don, I got to ask you something. You said a gust of wind came and almost took Nancy away. Are you implying that she would have got on a broom and went into the wind?
Wow.
Are you calling her a wicked witch?
What's going on here?
There were many things that were affected by the wind at the beginning of that movie, right? There was the house. There was the cow. Yes, there was the witch that eventually the house fell on, but then the woman that wanted to take the dog away that ended up playing the witch later on. Everybody was affected by the wind. So no, I'm not trying to apply that Nancy's a witch. It was a big gust of wind. What else would you do? I mean, it was really, she was outside, and then I heard the wind first. Then I saw everything just kind of blow away, and I just went, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. She laughed. It was a great moment.
Peter, do you realize that Don broke that down like he had a telestrator in front of him? It affected the cow. It affected the house. The lady that became the witch. It affected her.
Who hasn't seen
the witch? See what you got here. You got the witch over here, right? See the witch. You got to watch for the witch. You got to watch for the cow, though. The cow's over here in the corner. Don went full Madden. He's Don Madden.
Yeah, Don Madden. Don Madden. Wow.
Right over here. You got to watch for the wind here. It picks up big here. You got to watch that.
Let's go to Kevin in New York. Kevin.
Hey, how's it going, guys? So I just wanted to touch base on the Mets. Everybody is putting their eggs in one basket with Syndergaard and with Carrasco coming back, but I feel like we really don't know what type of pitchers they're going to be. Syndergaard obviously has the, you know, character behind him and everything, but, you know, there's a good chance that he's, you know, a guy who's letting up a lot of home runs. I think what it's going to come down to is seeing if you could get the, you know, high on-base percentage, high batting average guys going like McNeil, and see if Conforto can get out of the slump. I think that's what it's going to come down to. I personally don't think we can rely on, you know, starting pitching coming back in June or July. Thanks.
I'll tell you what, though, Kevin. Carlos Carrasco is a really good pitcher. I mean, there's no gamble about him. He pitched very well in the shortened season last year. He's got credibility. He's got a back of a baseball card that's impressive. And, you know, Syndergaard comes back throwing 100 miles an hour. I think he's going to get some wins. I think he's going to help this team. I don't think their offense is in question. I think their defense is in question, which makes you wonder, Don, how are they ever going to get J.D. Davis in the lineup every single day? He's not a good defender.
No, that's going to be a problem because it's really bad there at third base. And we'll see if they get aggressive and try to find somebody. But listen, I understand what he's saying. You got to be careful with these guys coming back from Tommy John. Yankees are going to go through it with Severino as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen that not only do pitchers come back, you know, better and redefined when they come back, that they can actually come back right away. Now, not all of them do, and maybe it will take a little time. But I think between the two of them, I think at least one of them can pitch well and pitch better than what they have at the back end of the rotation. So we're not putting all our eggs in one basket. It's just a fact that two, you know, pretty good pitchers are going to come back, and there's every indication they should come back at least close to full strength, which I think is better than what they already have at 3, 4, and 5.
Patrick Villanova tweets us, I honestly can't tell if Griffin is a 12-year-old boy or a 67-year-old grandfather. Either way, that voice is Mage. And then Linda writes, oh, my God, you guys are too much today. I haven't stopped laughing. And, yes, Michael K. does look awesome today.
Listen, I said it last week, and Fridays are just tremendous. They're just the best.
I will say this, and this could be misinterpreted. I'm sorry if it is.
I'm sure it will
be. If you're not listening to the show, what are you doing? If you have a friend that's not listening to the show, what's that friend doing? Do they not know what entertainment is? Do they not know what piping hot sports talk is?
Well.
Do they not know what free money is? See ya! See ya! See ya! We're celebrating our new 2 p.m. start time by giving away $10,000 this month in the month of April. So be the first caller right now at 888-987-ESPN to score $500 cash. Again, that's 888-987-3776. Be listening every weekday in April during the 2 p.m. hour of the Michael K. Show for your chance to win. And it's all from your home for the hookup, 98.7 ESPN. Well, here you go. Joe and Wayne wants a piece of Don.
Don, what happened last night to the New Jersey Devils?
They were beaten. You didn't have to take the ice pick. It was a plus 240. That should have given you an indication it was a bit of a Hail Mary. I've been struggling
right now, man.
Joe, do you realize that Don has lost?
Been at the Continental Arena.
Joe, I can't answer to because, you know, I thought you were talking about my ice pick. No, they're an embarrassment right now. They are. They've lost 8 in a row. I don't even know what direction they're going into. They got the same owner as the Sixers, and I'm wondering if they even care. They've been in a rebuild now for like 4 years. No, it's an embarrassment now what's going on there in New Jersey. And here's the other thing. You know, has there ever been a franchise that has been attached to one guy? They were nothing before Lou, and they've been nothing since. Don, now you see what Lou's doing over there with the Islanders.
Don, but, you lost 10 of 11.
Yeah, we probably need to spend
picks. It might be time to, like, put those picks on hold for a while.
No, well what I got to stop doing is I got to stop getting greedy. Like, Peter mentioned something very cogent the other day about, well, what's the matter with minus 105? And if I went with Tampa like I wanted to and not be taken away by the minus 105, guess what? Tampa won 3-1. They covered.
Of course they did.
I've got to stop going for the helmet. But that was kind of tongue-in-cheek last night. Come on. Plus 240 is my pick. And if I had won it, I would have owned it, believe me.
But let's be honest. The problem is you are in such a bad way right now.
Oh,
right.
The people that have been betting every game are now losers.
It's
only a handful of bucks.
But you're playing desperate now.
There's no question.
You're playing desperate. You got to slow down, sit out a couple plays.
Towel off
and come back and do what you do. Stop thinking about the fact that you have been, I mean, you're making, who's the guy I don't like who does the picks with us during the football season?
RJ Bell.
RJ Bell. R.J. Bell. Who's right.
the guy I don't like?
I get confused between Griffin and R.J. Bell. There's so many enemies I have. You're making R.J. Bell look like incarcerated Bob. You know what I mean?
Wow.
I got to do better. Peter's right.
You got to do better. Just relax and do what you do. Don't overthink it.
Yankees did better yesterday. We'll pick it apart. What they do? What has lasting value? Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Troubling. Although he brings up great points, Don does have an opinion on everything. There's nothing he lays out on.
No, that's true. But he doesn't deserve to be accosted for it.
Well, I mean, the guy made a point. He didn't accost him. He said in a very mellow tone. Don said, under the influence of grain alcohol. Well, I mean, he didn't yell.
Well, considering he was supposedly on grain alcohol, he was actually really controlled.
I thought so, too. All right, so here's Robert Saleh. I don't know if you know this, but he's the new Jet coach.
I've heard of him.
So he talked about the topic of feeling pressure. Here's Saleh.
I don't think there's risk. You know, it still comes down to having a good football team and building a good roster around around everybody. I mean, there's players here that are talented. There's rookies that are going to be coming in that are talented. And so as far as pressure is concerned, there's no pressure on me. It's just there's always pressure. There's always pressure to put together the best football team we possibly can, regardless of who's playing.
So he said there's no pressure on him, which got me to thinking. In order, in the major teams in New York, who has the most pressure? And I would say that Boone probably has the most pressure.
Sure.
Always.
Number two, I think it's Joe Judge this year.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
You know,
because
I think they
went out and spent a lot of money. You basically had your owner all but say it's playoffs or bust.
I guess number three would be Trotz.
Yeah,
because that team's built to win.
What about Rojas?
Well, I'm getting to him.
All right.
Because you are getting to the point now where, okay, it's nice. You went to the conference final last year. You know, so there's pressure to at least be better than you were last year. And considering there's very little margin for error when you're talking about, you know, going to the Final Four last year, yeah, I would think that he would probably be three.
Then you have Rojas. And you know what? You can convince me Rojas would be third ahead of Trotz. Because Trotz, Lou's not firing Barry Trotz.
No.
Even if they don't win the Stanley Cup. If Rojas doesn't make the playoffs this year, there's a chance he's gone.
Yeah, especially since the owner didn't hire you.
Right.
I would. You know what? Rojas is three.
Yeah, let's move him to three.
Yeah.
I would disagree with Saleh. I think Saleh is I mean, they're expecting things from the Jets. Now, does he have to make the playoffs? But he's a first-time coach. For him to say there's no pressure on him, well, you haven't experienced New York yet, my friend.
Well, that's a hope.
Do you think Saleh then is fifth?
Yeah, because David Quinn's not going anywhere. But you know, it is. You know, he'll be entering his fourth year next year. I know he's not going to get fired, but there's probably some pressure in that he hasn't.
I think
had
next year he's got pressure.
Yeah, he'll move up the ladder quickly next year. And, you know, there's nothing on, you know, Nash has no pressure.
Now, you know what?
In his first year
in
New
Jersey. Wait a second. I think Nash is up there. I think Nash could be ahead of Trotz. I think it's Rojas than Nash.
Well, hold on. Hold on. Couldn't Nash be even higher than Nash could be, if they're all healthy and we get to the playoffs, I mean, that's
you know what?
Pressure.
I feel very, very good about the new me. I was wrong. I think Nash is ahead of Judge. I think Nash might be too.
Well, how are you looking at it?
They got to win the championship.
Who are you taking out?
But the question is who, because where does the pressure come from? The pressure comes from losing your job, right? That's the pressure you're talking about.
Well, I mean,
so I don't think Nash is going
to
get fired because the players love him, so I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah, but in terms of your job is to win a championship.
Sure.
But where does the pressure come from? There's a lot of pressure on him.
But where does the pressure come from? In every walk of life, the pressure comes from you don't do your job properly, you lose it. Because then there's no pressure if you're not going to lose your job.
I mean, but he can lose his job.
I don't think pressure comes from, you know, the media scrutiny. These guys all claim they don't pay attention to it. It comes from am I going to lose my job if I don't do a good job here? Now, do you think Nash could get fired if this team got beat in the second round?
If it's because he doesn't do a good job. If those three guys are healthy and they don't at least get to the NBA Finals, he failed miserably. So I'm putting him too. Okay. I'm glad Peter brought him up.
But again, will he lose his job because of it?
I don't know. Well, Judge, I don't think will lose his job if the Giants don't make the playoffs. Gettleman will.
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Because Nash was hired by those players. So as long as they don't turn on him, I think he's got a job there. Right?
Yeah, but he would be – well, let's look at pressure another way. If you don't win, you're a failure. Even if you keep your job, you failed.
Because if we're going to go strictly by, you know, the pressure of just there being pressure, then, yeah, Boone would be number one. But if you talk about possibility of losing his job, would Boone be number one?
Could be.
I don't think Boone's close to losing his job, do you?
If they don't make the playoffs?
I don't know. You know better than me. You said, you've gone on record saying what a joke it would be if Boone ever got fired because he's doing what the organization is telling him to do.
There's going to have to be some sacrificial lamb if they don't make the playoffs with a $205 million payroll.
I mean, Michael, if they don't come close to a championship, and I actually think there's several ways in which, and I'm not saying I agree with this, but I think there are several ways in which an unsuccessful finish could end things for Boone here.
All right, so we've got, maybe Don doesn't agree, Boone, Nash, Judge, Rojas, Trotz, Sala, Quinn, is Ruff in any danger?
Well, I mean, they just hired him. I don't think they're going to fire him after 1 year.
Okay.
So
who are we missing? Oh, I don't think there's any pressure on Tibbs.
No, Tibbs is golden. The fact that we forgot him tells you that there's no shot of feeling any pressure right now. But it's funny, Michael, the guys that we said are lower on the list are going to take significant jumps next year. Because there will be pressure on Tibbs next year, because now you're not the little engine that could anymore. There's going to be expectations. If this team finishes fourth and wins a round, there's going to be legitimate talk during the offseason that this team is going to have to be at least going to the conference final. That puts a lot of pressure on him, right?
Now, here's Tannenbaum. I think he was on what show was he on? He was on Greeny. Okay. And he disagrees with Sala that Sala has no pressure. Here's Tannenbaum.
I think that's really naive. I just don't think he has any idea what's about to happen. Because when it goes great and Rex Ryan came in, it went really great for Rex, and we know the rest is history. But, boy, there are some dark days when you go on a three-game losing streak, and there's pressure from the day you agree to become the head coach, the GM, or the quarterback of a New York football team. It's an honor. It's a privilege. It's the best city in the world. It's the best sport in the world. But for him to say there's no pressure, I don't think he has any idea what he's in store for.
Now, Keyshawn disagrees with Tannenbaum and agrees with Sala.
There's no pressure on him. He's not worried about year one, but the people are going to try to apply pressure on him is what he's saying. But, you know, he's talking. So he's at a press conference.
See, there's pressure on him when they draft the quarterback. Yes, there is.
Zero pressure.
On his coaching staff that quarterback.
Yeah, and over time, not in year one. Year one, this isn't Mark Sanchez and a veteran cast of defensive players where this quarterback comes in, hands the ball off, every now and then you make a throw and they go to the AFC Championship game 2 years in a row. This is not the type of pressure. You're basically building a brand new team. This is like an expansion team right now for the Jets. This is really what this is. And so Joe Douglas has to essentially get players in the draft 2 years from now, 3 years from now, we'll start to talk about that pressure. Year one, there's no pressure.
Now, I would tend to agree with Keyshawn when you're talking about losing your job, but I also understand what Tannenbaum's saying. If the Jets start off 0-5, people aren't going to be in love with Robert Saleh. He's going to get some pressure. But as Don said, what we're arguing about here is whether or not you're in danger of losing your job. There's no way even Adam Gase didn't lose his job in the first year, and everybody thought he was awful.
Right.
So very few people lose their job in the first year.
See, that's the point, is that pressure is only what you let in. You're right. Being in New York, no matter what the expectations are for the Jets, they lose their first five, six games in a row, There's some controversial decisions by him. We're going to be talking about it. We're going to be ripping him. The fans are going to be ripping him. The newspaper is going to be ripping him. But if he's not in danger of losing his job and he's not paying attention to any of that noise, then there's no pressure. But right? There was no real pressure on Judge. There were times, Peter, we were critical of Judge. But yeah. I think for the most part during the year, there was no pressure. There weren't a lot of expectations around him. That's all going to change this year. But last year, no, he just got his job. He wasn't going to get fired.
It's so situational, though, because Judge never had a moment where we went, what the hell is going on here? There was the weird stuff with his assistant coach and the midseason firing and whatever. There were some things that, you know, made you go have a conversation. But I don't know. Is there a chance that Saleh has to deal with a more annoying circumstance and higher pressure because of how bad Gase was and the fact that people were upset that he stuck around as long as he did?
Well, it's interesting that you say that because that could take pressure off of him because Gase was so bad they're going to give this guy a chance. And also,
well, that's what I think will happen.
Expectations, though.
But yeah,
Judge has expectations. I don't think the Jets have expectations other than to make sure that Zach Wilson doesn't get killed.
Now, the difference is that the buildings are going to be full, right? Unlike last year, where you're not going to hear boos or fire Saleh if they get off to an awful start. But I think these coaches have learned to kind of deflect the noise. So I think any pressure that they feel, and I think this is what Saleh's talking about, is within the organization. And I can't imagine, no matter how bad things are, Saleh's going to get fired. And Keyshawn's right. It's a glorified expansion team. You're either going to have some veteran stopgap starter on opening day, or you're going to have a kid that many people believe deserves to be the number two pick but is not ready for the NFL. So really, how can anybody go in there and expect them to rattle off a bunch of wins?
Random question that the thought popped into my head. If the Jets and Giants over the next year or two both meet or exceed expectations, and Saleh turns out to be in persona the guy that we think he is, which is a big part of his hire, right? Like, he's a football mind, but he's also just seems like a great, likable face in the franchise. This would be the most likable and popular Jets-Giants coach combo since what?
Rex and Coughlin.
But was right, Coughlin?
Coughlin was loved once he won the Super Bowls.
Problem is when they were in love with Rex was 2009 and 2010, and there was already talk about Coughlin getting fired.
Right, before he then won another one.
Then he won one in 2011. They fell back in love with him again, and that's when the Jet fans started to fall out of love with Rex.
But they didn't fall out of love with Rex 1 year after the AFC Championship game. It was, I mean, those were the two most popular. That's the last time they had two coaches everybody liked.
Right. When you get to, you know, how they blew it at the end of 2011 and the Giants win the Super Bowl, yeah, I don't think everybody completely fell out of love with Rex, but he was on notice. And then by the next year, they fell out of love, and then 2 years later, he's out of a job. But, you know, probably that would be the closest because, I don't know, when you go back to Parcells here, who were the Jet coaches then?
That's what I'm saying. There aren't really many beloved Jets coaches, are there?
What was it, Alex Webster and Weeb Eubank?
Weeb Eubank,
was it Weeb Eubanks and Alex Webster?
But just the fact that we're having the conversation in this tone shows that, I mean, the Jets at coach, it's almost like quarterback.
And that could be the reason they have trouble with quarterbacks, too.
Right. But it's interesting. Yeah. The Giants have both. Giants have several beloved quarterbacks and several beloved coaches.
Well, because they have several Super Bowls. The Jets have one.
But
the only beloved quarterback is from then.
If Robert Saleh doesn't believe he's got a lot of pressure, then he probably doesn't. Because he's not going to pay attention to the noise.
But you also said there's not going to be boos for – I mean, NFL stadiums are expected to be full this year.
Well, that's what I said. That's the difference. Last year, Judge didn't have to hear any boos, right? The building was empty.
Right.
Now, that's going to be different. And but again, the boos, you don't have to pay attention to the boos. Now, so I think Mike Tannenbaum's right. There are some guys that come in here and they hear it. They say they don't listen to the radio or read the paper. But you know there's some that do. And those are guys that are susceptible to pressure. But if you're somebody that just shuts it out, you know, Gase seemed to be a guy to shut it out. He wouldn't come on our air, right?
Gutless.
But, all right, fine. But that was probably a guy, by not coming on our air and doing the interview, allowed him to shut all the noise out. So if you shut all the noise out and you only focus on what's happening inside the building, then the only pressure you're going to feel is going to come from inside the building. If you're somebody that pays attention to the talk shows, reads the papers, pays attention to what the fans are saying to you, then you will feel the pressure. So it all depends on the human. How do you do that? Now, is Saleh going to come on with us this year?
I don't know. Oh, we forgot Herm. Who was the Giant coach when Herm was the coach? Because Herm was liked.
So, you're going back to Fossil. Yeah, it was, well, Coughlin 04. So, yeah, there was overlap there.
Yeah.
But I don't know, again, there wasn't, early on there was love for Coughlin because he wasn't Fossil. But going in, there were legitimate talk at 0-2 in 2007 that Tom Coughlin would not survive the season. So that's pressure, right?
Yep.
I don't think anybody is going to call for Saleh's job. We'll get wacky callers at the end of the season. We always do. You have to be. You know how bad you have to be to lose your job after 1 year?
Well, then if you're looking for calls for the job, then it'll be Boone, Rojas, and Nash. I think Net fans will blame Nash. If all three guys are healthy and they don't win, then those three guys will have their jobs called for.
Yeah, but if KD and Kyrie and Harden want Nash to be their coach, he stays the coach.
I
agree
coach
with you. That could change. Because if they do lose in the second round and the players feel the heat, they may decide to throw Nash under the bus. That could happen very easily. But listen, make no mistake, Michael, he was hired by the players.
Well, it was certainly spurred on, for sure. I don't know if they said go out and get Steve Nash. I mean, I think Atkinson was fired by the players, and then I think that Sean picked a coach that he thought would fit with the players. They wouldn't know that Steve Nash would be, although Steve Nash did have a relationship with Durant. We'll never know. They'll never tell us.
But listen, there's pressure because you could see that happening, right? Nets have a disappointing outing in the postseason, and they decide, we're going to blame the coach, and let's get him fired. So that would add pressure. So I agree with you. Nash would probably be three, because I do think the Nets are going to do well, right? I don't know where the Mets are going here. I think they're going to be good. I'm not worried about them. But right now you've got a manager that has zero experience, wasn't their first choice, and wasn't the choice of either the owner or the general manager right now, or the president. Sandy wasn't here.
No, but he was one of Sandy's guys in the minors, and Sandy had the right to keep him or not, and he decided to keep him.
Yeah.
So Sandy owned it.
Well, Sandy owned it. But it's still like Steve came aboard, and I guess he's going to listen to what Sandy has to say. But no, there's really no resume where you're like, give this guy a chance. If this team all of a sudden starts losing games, it's an easy fix to let him go. He's not making any money, right? I would think he's the easiest to replace.
Now, very quickly, KD has been ruled out tonight against the Celtics.
Well, he was questionable.
Yep, no more.
He was questionable.
The
now,
question's
the
answer.
Question is no.
The answer
is no.
The question is,
You don't even have to go to the Barclays Center tonight. There's no need.
Well, but I want to see the Celtics.
Yeah, so what? Watch it on TV. You want to see KD play.
Well, for the record, Celtics.
What is Bear screaming about?
Bear? You feeling the seas tonight? Bear was just saying, wow. It's a fantastic point. I'll bring it up. Bear was saying that the Celtics are on the second half of a bet. Hey, Bear, I need you to shut up. He said, the fact that the Celtics are on the second half of a back-to-back, you never know what can happen. Well, and furthermore, how likely is it that Kemba plays as well tonight as he did last night, which I think is a great point.
You know what? The game's on yes. I don't know if you realize that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask the production crew to get a shot of you in the leather jacket.
So, but I'll have to tell you what suite I'm in, I'll make sure I sit outside the suite.
Or just hold a sign, I'm Peter Rosenberg.
I don't know if that would feel a little... It's already bad enough that I wear that Def Jam jacket that has my name on it.
Oh, I hate that jacket. Hate it.
Why would he hate it?
It's ridiculous.
It's a gorgeous jacket. People love it. Don, don't you love
it? But
it
has your name on it.
Well, that's the thing.
Would Aaron Judge wear a Yankee jacket with Judge on the back if he goes to a club?
It's not on the back. It's just in script on the chest.
Oh, please. It's awful. It's an embarrassment.
But that's sports.
That's the point.
Most of these guys, all through high school and college, wore wore a jacket of their team with their name stitched on the
front. Well, Don, it's a varsity jacket.
Yeah, right.
But Peter's 49 years old.
First of all, I'm 41 years old. Second of all, this jacket was so limited. I felt so honored to
get
this
jacket. You know why it's limited? Because not a lot of people wanted it.
No.
You wanna, no, it's a gorgeous jacket, Michael. Stop it.
I'm going to see if I can even – let's see if it's even on grailed. I don't even know if it's on grailed.
Well, while you're looking at grailed, let's take a look at this day in Yankee history. Please. Brought to you by Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi. How did Andrew do today? What do you think?
I think he followed up yesterday with even better.
All right. Wow. We go back to 2000. Andrew takes us back to 2000. Toronto Sky Dome. Yankees Bernie Williams and Jorge Posada in a 10-7 victory over the Blue Jays become the first teammates to each homer from both sides of the plate in the same game. Felipe Lopez and Tony Clark will become the second pair of teammates to accomplish the feat, also homering from each side of the plate for the Diamondbacks on opening day in 2009. That's this day in Yankee history, brought to you by Woodbridge, a proud sponsor of the New York Yankees. Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, making classic wine for over 40 years. Now, he could have gone back to 2014.
All right.
With the Michael Pineda Pine Tar game at Fenway Park.
Ooh.
He could have gone back to 1903 when the Highlanders got their first win, a 7-2 win over the Senators in Washington. That's the Yankees' first win ever.
Yeah, but there were the Highlanders. And also, I don't think Bobby Mondavi over there wants to have a negative Yankee history with the Pineda. So I think
so it goes back to either the first win or the one that Andrew came up with. Okay.
And I think Andrew did a good job.
That's this day in Yankee history. I'll say it again. Brought to you by Woodbridge, a proud sponsor of the New York Yankees. Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, making classic wine for over 40 years. All right, we'll come back. Who has pressure? I know we have pressure. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by the Pepe Auto Group. The spring sales event is going on now at Mercedes-Benz of White Plains. Take advantage of limited-time offers and incentives. Visit mbwhiteplains.com. Congratulations to Tony Ofiro from Stamford, Connecticut. He was our second winner of Clubhouse Confidential. There's one more to go. All right, so we hear this a lot, and I think we hear it from analytic-based front offices that, you know, the analytics get you through the regular season and will get you to the playoffs. After that, it's a crapshoot. And I think they use that as a CYA excuse. How about doing this? How about designing a process and a team that can actually get through the season, get to the playoffs, and then actually excel where it's not a crapshoot in the playoffs? Now, I know a short series, anything could happen, but I think we see a lot of the things that are hallmarks of a team that hits home runs that sometimes it doesn't work out in the postseason. Why does the crapshoot never go your way? There must be a flaw in what you're doing. There has to be a flaw. I mean, the Dodgers have lost World Series, but they've gotten there. And they finally broke through last year. So I'm starting to run out of patience with, well, the postseason's a crapshoot. Well, you're all smarter than we are. Make it less than a crapshoot. Actually make it something that will work in a short series. Don't design a team that's great over 162 and then a complete roll of the dice in the most important month of the year. Make it a better team that maybe puts the ball in play and moves the runners and takes the extra base and can steal a base and get down a sacrifice bunt. Make that team also part of the 162 so that when you get to the postseason, not so much of a crapshoot. How about that?
But how do you do that? Right?
Hey, they're the geniuses, not me.
I know, but here's – because what it is just taking analysis. And the bigger sample size, the more accurate things are going to be, right? That's why they talk about it being a crapshoot. Here's what I'm going to put together to win 162 games. I can't plan for the postseason because there's no guarantee I'm going to get there. But I'm guaranteed to play the 162 games. What gives me the best chance to win over that sample size? Now, the reason the postseason's a crapshoot, Michael, is that first round is a best – if you not the wild card, just the one game. The first series is a best of five. That's five games. I can't come up with something – that's equivalent to the 162, I'd have to rejigger the sample size, which means I might have to go about things a different way, which means I might need different players.
Yeah.
Don't so build a team. How do you have players for 162 and what, change the players for the playoffs?
Well, but no. You should be able to build a team for the long haul that could succeed because you're the smartest people in the world. Build that team because the most important month, the month where you get the ring, is the month where it's a crapshoot. You know what? I don't want that month to be a crapshoot. I want the best team to win in that environment in a short series and build a team that could do both. Again, they're the geniuses. They're the ones with the spreadsheets. Make it work for both. Don't turn. That's Billy Beane's excuse all the time. And Billy Beane, I think, is a genius. You know, I could just get them in the playoffs after that. It's a crapshoot. No. Your team's not good enough to win in the postseason. That's why they always lose. The Minnesota Twins, they're really good to get to the postseason. They can't win in the postseason. So please stop with the crapshoot stuff. Build a better engine. That is not so much of a crapshoot. There's got to be a way. There's got to be something. Somebody with a slide rule has to crack the code. Give me a team that gets to the playoffs and plays well in 162. And you know what? Plays well in the postseason. It can be done. Sure it can be done.
Here's how it's done. Okay? Is that you take everything that got you there analytically and throw it away.
And then you can't do that in October.
Then when you get to October, it's like, all right, guys, we're going to have to change. All right?
Can't
so forget all the analytics. We're going to do what gives us the best chance to win on that particular day, and that means doing this. But they don't want to do that because then that's kind of – they don't want to throw that away. They want to still stick with the analytics. And it's easy for them to explain it away by saying – well, it's a crapshoot. Well, it's a crapshoot because you decide to still use that formula in a best-of-five or best-of-seven series when all those numbers work in 162 but don't necessarily work in a five-game series against the same team.
But unless you change the formula for the regular season, Don, you can't recalibrate and do a different thing in the post because you're going to keep the same players. So you get players to do one thing, and then you're going to ask them to do another thing. Well, hit the ball against the shift rather than those players aren't able to do it. So I think there's and the one misconception about analytics, right? Analytics doesn't mean hit home runs and walk and strike out. Analytics are what's the best way to win.
Right.
I'm analyzing through numbers the best and most effective way to win. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a way to win in 162 and in a short series. Why haven't they come up with it? I don't want to hear the excuse. It's a crapshoot in October. Not good enough.
But here's where I would change it, okay? I understand what you're saying. That's what I had said before. You can't all of a sudden just change all your players. The players have been worried about launch angle and not having a two-strike approach and not moving runners over and hitting over the shift and all that. Now all of a sudden you're going to tell them in a best-of-five series, scrap everything that we try to do something different. Can't do that. But what you can do, Michael, is tweak it. All right? Game one, Cole pitches to Higashioka. Higashioka hits three home runs in the game. Guess what? He's playing game two. Believe in Hot. Because you know what? Hot might work in the postseason. Because if it is a crapshoot, then what you're lending it to is the reason it's a crapshoot is because Hot matters then. Because it's a very short sample. So you know what? If somebody has a great game, play him the next day. In the regular season, you'd sit him because that's his day to rest or he doesn't face the lefty or whatever. But if he has a great game in game one, play him in game two. That's the kind of stuff, Peter, that if you change around, that you can work the analytics but maybe start expanding your belief in other areas.
But it sounds like all you're saying is believe in analytics, do the work, but also be sensible and make sports decisions that have been made since the dawn of time. Don't simply throw out every bit of gut you have to follow a notebook.
Yeah.
Isn't
maybe
all
gut works in the postseason.
I mean, listen, I know I bring this up all the time. It worked with the Nationals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Work with the Red Sox.
Yeah, they give him information. They allow him to manage with his gut. This is from Sportico. Pretty big story.
I just saw this.
Wilpon family is going to sell SNY. And Steve Cohen is among those interested. He's coordinating with owners of the YES Network, including the Yankees, Sinclair Broadcasting, and Redbird Capital, the investment fund run by former Goldman Sachs partner Jerry Cardinale. And Jerry Cardinale is one of the geniuses that helped put the YES Network together 20 years ago. The group has extensive RSN connections beyond just YES Network. Sinclair owns an additional 21 RSNs. Redbird recently acquired a stake in Nesson. So as part of a wider investment group in a Fenway Sports Group. So Cardinal, the Mets, and a representative for Allen & Company, the bankers that sold the team and would handle any SNY transaction, all declined to comment. You just knew this was going to happen. And I think that's a big part of Cohen owning this team, because they've got control of the Mets for like 10 more years, something, I think, SNY. Well, if they don't sell to Steve Cohen now, at the end of this, he's saying, well, you know what? I'm not re-signing with you. And then SNY ceases to exist. They don't have another team. So the smart play is to get out of it now, sell it for the billions that it's worth, and then Steve Cohen keeps the Mets on SNY in perpetuity. But he's got some leverage in 10 years. SNY would be worth nothing if the Mets walked away.
But they already got the what's the phrasing? They've already got the outlets, right, to pay for SNY. So how long are those for?
Well, I don't know all of their different agreements with the cable companies, but you know, if you own SNY, then you could also get into streaming, which I think a lot of teams are going to do.
Right.
So this makes sense, and if you're the Wilpons, Don, you sold the Mets and SNY. Your final take is going to be around $5 billion. They did okay.
Yeah.
They lost the team, but they did okay.
Well, they did very well. But the reason I was saying is that one of the big things, it doesn't even matter about ratings anymore. These networks make their money off of being able to be on the different outlets and how much money they get from being on DirecTV and Spectrum and Optimum and all that, right? So if they were to lose the Mets, would SNY still have value because they still have contracts and then go buy, get a contract with another team?
No.
If you can't.
No, there's no other team in New York that they'd get. I mean, it's all tied up. So they have the Mets deal with SNY expires in 2030. 9 years. This is the time to sell, because the closer you get to it, Cohen goes, you know what, I'm going to start my own network. And SNY then would have UConn women's basketball,
right,
and jet shows.
Unless they, for some reason, by the time we got to 2030, found another team.
Well, yeah, teams. But every team's locked up. The Yankees are locked up on YES. The Knicks and Rangers, they're
until
all locked
when?
Up
that's
on
what
MSG.
I'm asking.
No, I just don't know if it could happen. And according to the story in Sportico, the owners of the YES Network, for the owners of the YES Network, there's value in adding more scale in the form of highly valuable sports rights. That holds true for Sinclair, Redbird Capital, and another YES Network investor, Amazon, which is growing out sports content on Prime Video. So Prime Video in New York in this footprint tonight, having its second Yankee game on. So a game that's on Pix 11 this year, 21 games on Pix 11, can also be seen on Prime Video. A lot of stuff going on. Busy, busy Friday.
Isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes. Let's go to Thomas in Floral Park. Thomas.
Thomas.
Hey, guys. First time calling. Big fans.
Oh, thanks, man. What do you got?
I just wanted to make a point about baseball losing viewership. Right? I know you guys brought it up a couple of times. It's interesting to me because it's kind of weird, right? When you think about sports, especially for our demographic, the biggest things are like fantasy, sports betting, and the underlying there is numbers, right? And you guys are talking about analytics all day, but if you really think about it, baseball has been in the forefront of analytics since, you know, the sabermetrics research back in the day, like, you know, every club is doing it.
Started with Bill James.
Analytics.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, is into it. All the other sports are actually chasing it, right? Like, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, like the war stat that baseball has, I'm sure contracts are like directly associated with it. But I don't think DVOA and any of the other stats in the other sports like can closely tie, contracts to that. So all the clubs are probably chasing different stats constantly. And, like, you know, even think about your Fitbit, right? Like, people, you know, have the watches. It's measuring their heartbeats. It's measuring their walks. Like, everyone baseball has always been on top of that.
Well, yeah, but other sports are chasing it. Don could tell you they use analytics now in hockey. They use it in basketball. That's why teams take 1,000 threes a game. And there's analytics involved. Analytics is just analyzing the data,
right,
to tell you what's the best people to have on the field to win. And in football, they're trying it too, when to go for two and stuff like that. It's all analyzing data.
And I'm fine with that. But the problem I have with baseball, as opposed to the other sports, it's become almost a cult where this is the way it is, and you're stupid if you don't do it this way, and it doesn't matter whether it works or not. We're going to continue to do it because these are what the numbers say. When sometimes going with your gut, going with an instinct, hey, listen, the NHL uses analytics, you know, but David Quinn or Lindy Ruff or Barry Trotz will get a feeling on a player and say, you know what, I'm going to have him be a healthy scratch today. I'm going to go with this guy or go with a different goaltender. And it'll just change. Trust that coach and his experience.
It'll change. It will usurp coaches' powers. Watch. Just but like it has in baseball.
But
the smarter the front office is, they're going to think they're smarter than the coach because, again, it's been said in baseball, the managers are now middle managers. Yeah. They're not the powerful people on the team.
But let's not forget the reason this was all instituted in the first place was because the Oakland A's didn't have any money. This was the only way they could do business.
Yeah, they want to find inequities.
And now everybody is doing it. So now everybody's doing it. So not everybody can win, Michael, and obviously not everybody does it the right way. But we have showed examples, whether what Peter said about the Nationals or a couple of years ago with the Red Sox, winning championships when they've broken away and have made decisions by the gut. I'm cool with all the analytics, but just allow at least some room for expertise, some room for experience, some room for just having a hunch instead of it just actually driving everything that you do to the point where your manager is basically a cardboard cutout.
Yeah, they don't believe in hunches. Let's go to Daniel in Union. Daniel.
Hey, guys, what's up?
How you doing?
Good. So, you know, I'm going to make 2 points, and hopefully my first point doesn't upset you too much so I can get to the second one. But it's almost like when Yankees fans come to complain, it's like we're not allowed to complain about anything. We can't complain about Cashman because he's the greatest. We can't complain about Boone because managers don't do anything. We can't complain about the hitting because, oh, it's a 162-game season. They're going to hit eventually. What can I complain about?
You know what? You can complain, Daniel, but, I mean, if you're listening to this show, and I thank you if you are, I'm just giving you why you shouldn't be panicking after 15 games. But you have every right to complain. That's the beauty of being a fan. But, I mean, people are jumping off the roof after 15 games. But, that's just not smart, Daniel.
No, but just – I'll let Daniel make his second point. But here's the issue, and I just brought it up before. All right, it's not Boone's fault because he's listening to management. The team's not built right. Oh, but when you blame Brian Cashman, oh, you can fire Brian Cashman. He'll get hired tomorrow by somebody. Well, where can we go? We can't complain about the manager because he's being dictated by the organization. And then when we criticize the organization, it's, well, listen, Brian Cashman's great. Well, somebody's got to be at fault here. Well,
maybe that's part of the analytics. Maybe they found a way to be bulletproof.
Well, you're on to something there.
What else you have, Daniel? No, I didn't get mad. That's a good point.
And then my second, you know, I don't believe what you guys are saying about Aaron Boone, like he's some type of puppet for Brian Cashman. The manager does not lay down at every decision. If he had a gut feeling and he told Brian Cashman, listen, Brian, trust me on this, we're going to try it. Do you really think Brian Cashman would say no?
No, you're right.
I'd like to know who's that and Brett Gardner third. I want to know who's doing it. They need to be fired and sent out of New York because only an idiot would bat Brett Gardner third.
Well, Daniel, we've had Brian on the show, and that's another good question. I think Aaron Boone is allowed to go with his gut, but it better work. Those are Brian's words. Yeah, my manager could go by the gut, but if it doesn't work, he's going to have to answer. Why'd you go up against what the numbers say? And I'm sure, I think that Aaron Boone has free will to do what he wants.
But he has
to win. But the numbers kind of guide him down that lane, Peter, if you know what I mean. So
I do, but don't you think then if Aaron Boone at some point wants greatness and not simply to be employed, is he going to have to make some gut decisions that takes this team to the next level?
I think, again, I don't know the inner workings of how this runs, but if he is guided by everything in the front office, I think at some point in his career, maybe it'll be this year because he doesn't have another year left in his contract, he's probably going to say, I'm going to win or lose the way I want to. And I believe, you know, the Yankees have, it's been put out there that that Girardi didn't have a great relationship, couldn't really, you know, communicate with today's generation of players. He seems like he's doing okay in Philly. But I believe that Joe is pushing back because Joe learned under Joe Torre and he was pushing back a little bit. He was also an analytic guy. And Joe Torre was out because Joe Torre would laugh at somebody who came in with an iPad because he said they don't measure heartbeat. The old-time guys talk about heartbeat. The newfangled guys don't believe in hot heartbeat. They don't believe in hot. They don't believe in cold. So I don't know. I don't know how much free will Aaron has, but I will tell you this. It's a tough decision for manager, Peter. Think about it. There are 30 of these jobs, 30 of them. Most teams are analytically bent.
Well,
so if you all of a sudden you rise up and it's like a scene from Braveheart and you just make out the lineup the way you want and you do what you want and it doesn't work, you might not get another job.
You might not. But you could sit around in mediocrity for a long time too.
But I do think there's certain protection in all this, right? Why would you fire anybody? You're going by the numbers, the raw numbers.
You're right.
But that's my point.
What does it matter who's doing it? You're following the numbers. Nobody can do it better than anybody else.
But
it's all the numbers. So why would any general manager be fired? Any manager be fired?
But that's the point. When are you going to be a manager who takes some risk knowing that if it fails, they're going to lose the job? I mean, this is like an old thing that people talked about, that people still talk about in WWE. Vince McMahon wanting superstars to, quote, reach for the brass ring. But if you reach for the brass ring, meaning you get on the mic one night on an episode of Monday Night Raw and you say, screw what the writers gave me. I'm just cutting a promo from the gut right now. If it becomes the talk of the world and everyone's talking about you, well, guess what? You just became Vince McMahon's favorite superstar. But if you fall face first, you're fired. And it's very similar here. Does Aaron Boone have to make a decision at some point, be the Yankees' mediocre manager who runs the team, or take a shot at glory and do some things that make your team win a championship, which, by the way, if it works, you're also guaranteeing yourself, what, 5 years? We don't have to worry about it because now you just won a championship?
I tell you, every time we talk about this, I think about that scene in Seinfeld. If you're one of us, you'll take a bite. That's what it just feels like. And then you end up believing it, Peter, where you don't stray because it's not that you necessarily believe it, but you know you have to believe it to keep your job. And now you become brainwashed. And you don't have the courage to step out of the box because you're so convinced that this is the only way to keep your job. It's really sad when you break it down, honestly. Very sad.
A lot of people on Twitter, Peter, maybe you could do this in ENN, that they're looking for a return of Don Madden. They really like Don Madden. I tell you what, our producer loved it too. Out of the blue, you came up with a beautiful rendition of Don Madden.
Did people want to hear me do Don Madden more, or was it more about just the idea of Don and John Madden combining into one person?
I think they like you being Don Madden and, you know, Don breaking down the scene from The Wizard of Oz if he had a telestrator in front of him. All right, there's the cow flying up in the air, and then the house takes off, and there's the lady that ends up being the witch in Oz, and it was brilliant. And then you encapsulate it with a spot on impersonation.
I think
was shocked.
It's cheeseworthy, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the return of Don Madden during ENN?
Could
all
be.
Right, or next segment,
could be.
Whatever.
Could be.
98.7 ESPN presents Clubhouse Confidential. It's Thursday, May 6th. It's going to be great. We're giving 98.7 listeners an inside look at the game with some of the best minds in baseball, featuring A-Rod, Matt Vasgersian, Buster Only, and it's all hosted by Don LaGreca. An exclusive VIP Zoom party talking all things New York baseball, and we'll give away some great prizes. To score your VIP access, be the first caller right now at 888-987-ESPN. Again, be the first caller right now at 888-987-3776. Clubhouse Confidential is presented by PC Richard & Son and 98.7 ESPN. A lot of people want to talk. John, Joey, John. We got three Johns. That doesn't sound good. If this was a poker hand, we'd win. A lot of people on hold. We'll get to you. Take some phone calls. We got it. I just want to know from our production crew, is the big fella joining us at 5:45?
No.
No.
Well, we got Rangers hockey coming up. So unless you just want to know what he's doing later today off the air.
How was the big fella during ENN yesterday?
Always great. Actually had a moment.
He had a moment.
We had a moment. Right,
what
Peter?
What was the moment again?
That simultaneous genuine apologies.
Yeah, that was...
We spoke at the same time, and I'm like, no, I'm sorry, Chris. And Chris like, no, I'm sorry, Don.
It was a very touching moment. That was a touching moment.
Play it for Michael.
It was a very special ENN.
All right, let's break real quick. We're on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.